Money Radio, thanks so much for joining us today and joining us now. It's a pleasure to welcome Frank Ahrens. Frank Ahrens was a reporter at the Washington Post for about 18 years, and then he joined Hyundai Motor Company, where he worked for several years, eventually rising to the rank of vice president, and he wrote a book about it, and it's entitled Seoul Man, S-E-O-U-L, as in Seoul, Korea. Seoul Man, a memoir of cars, culture, crisis, and unexpected hilarity inside a Korean corporate titan by Frank Ahrens, and that's spelled A-H-R-E-N-S, Frank Ahrens. Frank, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sinclair. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
First of all, not many people from the Washington Post head off to Seoul, Korea to work for a car company. Give us a little bit of your background and how that happened. And really, it was several life-changing events for you at one time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I always say this is what happens when you marry a diplomat. My wife, I had worked at the Washington Post, as you said, and my wife was also soon-to-be wife, had come to work at the Washington Post toward the tail end of my time there while she was applying to be a diplomat in the U.S. Foreign Service, which is a long multi-year application and tests and so forth. And we started going dating, and she said, listen, if I get into the Foreign Service, I want to go, and that means living overseas. And I had looked around my industry. This was 2008, 9, 10, when the newspaper industry was in a pretty steady decline, and this was before Jeff Bezos had bought the Washington Post and given it a lot of money to expand it to its current success. And I was middle-aged, in my mid-40s, and I also had the task of covering the newspaper industry as a reporter and the Washington Post company. And I read the quarterlies, and I saw our advertising revenue going down and our readership going down, and I knew I needed a plan B. And I had thought about moving into public relations anyway in the U.S. before I'd met my soon-to-be wife, Rebecca, but this was the spur to it. And I thought, well, you know, I will make your dream my dream. And Rebecca got into the Foreign Service. She was posted to Seoul 9 months hence, so that meant I had 9 months to look for a job. And so I just started calling around and emailing my contacts and doing a lot of praying. And by grace of God, the head of global PR for Hyundai Motor in Seoul was leaving the job. He was a Canadian, and the company wanted to hire a native English speaker because they'd be dealing with a lot of Western media. And I was going to be in Korea, and I had the qualifications. And I think it's Woody Allen says 90% of success is just showing up. So it was really God's grace and a lot of things falling into place. And we arrived in Korea in late October 2010, and on a Thursday, and my wife went to work on Friday, and I went to work at the U.S. Embassy, and I went to work the following Monday at Hyundai Motor.
Now, most Americans do not know much about Korea. Of course, there were some Korean vets who know a fair amount. Probably most Americans, what they know about it maybe comes from the old TV show MASH. Hmm. A lot of them know about Hyundai and Kia, the sister company of Hyundai, maybe Samsung phones. They know that it's kind of somewhere over there between China and Japan, and that's about it. Did you have any particular knowledge, you didn't, of Korea when you went over there? So it was a bit of a shock for you, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. I mean, I knew pretty much, as you say, what most Americans know. I knew a little bit about the war because my dad was a veteran and had served. I knew that it was very modern, lots of great education, high-speed internet, and in some ways it sort of felt like it was slightly in the future, the way that a lot of hyper-modern Asian economies can look from the West. Some people were saying that Korea is what Japan was 20 years ago. And so I knew a little bit about that going in. What I did not anticipate was the immersion into the Confucian culture. Confucianism, as we think about it in the West, is an old-timey Chinese guy who said a lot of very wise things. Well, what in fact it is, he set up a system for ordering society, and it's a very strict hierarchy based on based on age, social status, gender, wealth, all these things. And Korea is a Confucian culture. So you learn what your place is in the culture and who's your senior and who's your junior. And then I went to work at a corporation, which is by nature a vertical structure, but then a Confucian corporation, which is a hierarchy on top of a vertical structure. And this was a huge cultural shift for me, if only because I had come from an American newsroom, which is almost like anarchy. Forget about hierarchy. So it was a massive upheaval for me in a lot of ways.
The culture is probably a lot different than many of us imagine. Even if we do think of it as a modern culture, you described it as almost not quite.
Yeah, that was interesting. The first weekend we got there, we had a State Department sponsor family to sort of ease us into the culture, into the country, in our new home. And one of them said, "Welcome to Korea, the land of almost not quite." And what they meant was anybody who had lived in a big city would instantly get to Seoul and look around and see a big city that seemed recognizable as
modern, cosmopolitan.
Exactly. But then you find out that when you examine closer, things aren't quite exactly what you expect. Even little things, like I drove to Hyundai my first day and found all the cars had backed into their parking spaces instead of going in head first, and that was expected for whatever reason. So I started doing it. Just little things like... for instance, I would take a cab ride, and the cab driver was watching television in his car as he was driving, because all Korean cars come with the ability to get live television streaming, over-the-air television. And so the more you get in, it can be frustrating because you say, oh, big city, things should work the way I expect they do. But when you find out they do, you can get frustrated about it, so you have to readjust.
Also, Korea is a country of Koreans, and you are you're a middle-aged white guy from West Virginia. You kind of stuck out like a sore thumb.
Oh, I did. I remember my first day walking into Hyundai Motor headquarters in this gleaming multi-story lobby with beautiful new Hyundai and Kias up on pedestals all around. And I walk in and I'm just surrounded by streaming literally hundreds, if not a couple thousand Koreans walking past me, rushing to their jobs at 7 in the morning, all the men to a person wearing a dark suit, white shirt, and a colored tie, the women dressed in similar business point is, everyone was Korean, and what I mean by that is the country is 97% ethnically Korean. It is maybe the third most ethnically homogenous place, and that means homogenous-looking place among the peoples on the earth after North Korea and Japan. And at 5,000 people or so who worked at Hyundai Kia every morning, there were only about 7 non-Koreans and there was 1 American. And so it is something that when we come from the U.S. as a multicultural country, it was a real shock.
And also this Confucian hierarchy carried over to the corporate world. The major corporate players in Korea are really kind of family-oriented. They've grown up in specific families that really run the corporate culture of Korea.
Oh, absolutely. The joke is in North Korea, they hand down governments from father to son, and in South Korea, they hand down companies from father to son. And these massive worldwide known brands like Hyundai, Samsung, LG, Kia were all started by individual men right after World War II, pretty much after the Japanese occupation was over, after their defeat in World War II, with little repair shops or little import businesses. And they just grew and grew and grew with the aid of low interest government loans and government support in other ways. And they acquired different companies. And so now Samsung or Hyundai are 30 or 40 or 50 different companies. Hyundai owns many companies that have to do with the auto industry, but many that don't. Same thing with Samsung. And they control a disproportionate percentage of the Korean economy in a way that we haven't seen here in the U.S. since the days of Getty and Vanderbilt and Rockefeller.
And really, it is quite remarkable what has happened in Korea. You look back, roughly 70 years now. And for those of us who remember the old MASH episodes, they had the Korean farmers, basically peasants. It wasn't that far off. Korea was a very poor country, and most of the people were farmers, and things like that. And now it is a very advanced economy. I mean, that was rapid growth, rapid technological advancement as well.
No, absolutely. The way I think about it is that they compressed about 150 years of industrialization into about 50. No other modern country has done that. In the early 1960s, Korea was poorer than most nations. South Korea was poorer than most nations in Africa. Now it's the world's 12th or 13th largest economy. It's the only country in the world to go from an aid recipient to an aid donor in just a generation. And remarkably, up until late 70s or early 80s, I forget the exact year, North Korea actually had a bigger economy than South Korea's. So it not only has been quite a growth, it's been an exponential growth, certainly since the 80s.
And what is that like working for what is essentially a family-owned conglomerate?
Yeah, so it's kind of like... So the Chung family is the owner, the founder and owner of Hyundai Motor Group. The son of the founder is the current chairman. Any day now, he will pass it down to his son, who's the grandson of the founder, E.S. Chung, who hired me. There'll be remarkable changes as these big companies like Samsung move to the younger generations because, for instance, the current chairman of Hyundai Motor doesn't really speak any English at all, and his son, who hired me, went to graduate school in the U.S. Same is true of Samsung. So you're going to see an increasing globalization of these companies. Here's an example. I did global PR for Hyundai, and you wanted to get your boss's interviews. Well, the chairman like almost never gives an interview even to Korean media because. I mean, would you interview the king? Well, no, of course not. And so I said, okay, that's off the table. Can I get interviews for his son, the vice chairman, who speaks very good English? And they said no, because only the chairman speaks for the company. The vice chairman can talk to reporters off the record, but he cannot speak directly for the company because he's the son. He's not the father. And I said to my Korean deputy, I said, you know, every other auto company, Sergio Marchione, Carlos Ghosn, every other, Renault and Nissan and Toyota, mm-hmm. they have a top guy who can tell the story of that company. We don't. And his response to me was, they are salarymen CEOs. Ours is the owner. And that shows you the kind of respect and deference that was expected to be given working in a family-owned company in Korea.
And even without some of that PR that other auto companies may have enjoyed, Hyundai has really grown into a major player in the automotive world.
No, the growth is remarkable. I mean, it was only a generation and a half ago here in the U.S. that Hyundai cars were terrible, and they were, they were to the 90s what the Yugo was to the 80s, and the quality was so bad they almost pulled out of the market in the late 90s, but then when the current chairman took over from his father, they made a decade-long commitment to improving the quality and expanding and growing, building factories outside of Korea. And so now you put Hyundai and Kia together, and they're, I think, the world's fifth largest automaker. And people forget, this company only turns 50 years old this year. It was founded in 1967, and it's competing against companies like Chevrolet and Toyota that have 100-year-old histories and legacies.
And they've even gone so far as to be now considered tops in reliability. They've got great warranties and even more so design. And now they're competing against some of these luxury brands such as Mercedes and so forth. It's an incredible story. We will continue taking a look at it as we continue our conversation with Frank Ahrens, the new book, Soul Man. And it is a really interesting book, by the way, very well written, as you might expect from a former Washington Post reporter. Soul Man by Frank Ahrens. More in just a moment. Thanks so much for joining us today. Our guest, Frank Ahrens. He is the author of a new book, Soul Man, and that's S-E-O-U-L, as in Seoul, Korea. Soul Man, a memoir of cars, culture, crisis, and unexpected hilarity inside a Korean corporate titan. And that corporate titan is Hyundai Motors. You really got to see Hyundai take off from a company that was not well regarded globally to now one of the top producers. You also got to experience what goes on in corporate Korea. Right now, it seems as if Korean corporations are having several challenges. We look at what's happened to Samsung, Hanjin.
So the things you're speaking about is obviously in the news now. Korea is in a bit of crisis. They've impeached their president because of an access and corruption scandal. Political candidates are jockeying to be her replacement. It's alleged that some of the heads of the big companies were essentially strong-armed to give money to the government in return for favoritism. So this is quite a wide-ranging scandal and investigation going on in Korea right now. It obviously hurts the economy. It hurts the country's national standing. They have no functioning president while we have a new president here. And so it's important that they, you know, kind of get back on the right track. People tend to forget that Korea has been a democracy since only 1988. So it's a very young democracy. One thing to think about, though, that's extraordinary is we've seen all these protests, millions of people in Seoul coming out to protest the president before she was impeached. All peacefully, assembling, bringing their children, and then cleaning up after themselves, even separating recycling. And I said, you know, Korea has shown the world how to protest, and strong democracies outlast scandalous presidents. We had it here with Watergate, and the same thing will happen in Korea. Hyundai has been not pulled in so deeply in this. It's been focused mainly on Samsung and some of the others, big companies. Listen, this is going to be a situation where Samsung has dealt with the Note 7, which caught fire, and then the washing machines, which the tops would fly off of at times. It's still the world's largest maker of mobile phones, and the stock has gone up because the market seems to think they've handled the crises well.
Recently hit record highs.
Yeah. So any company that goes through a scandal has a home field advantage in its home country, will continue to buy the product. And Samsung is a juggernaut. Hyundai's nick has been that it didn't see the SUV boom coming. Hyundai has a sedan-heavy lineup. Their strategy was, we've made very good cars like Elantra and Sonata that have won Car of the Year and have sold very successfully for us. We're now going to try to keep making those cars better and better and pushing them up to German levels of performance and luxury. But while they were doing that, and the new cars they're making are better, gas prices came down and Americans wanted SUVs. And Hyundai only has two in its lineup. And so it's scrambling now to make a very big SUV and a small SUV while it is trying to launch its own premium line, Genesis, which will be its Lexus, which will have two SUVs in that. So Hyundai's playing catch-up because of the SUV boom right now.
And finally, you moved to a different country. You're an American. What did you learn that you can share with people who may consider living somewhere else? And what did you learn upon coming back to the U.S.?
Well, if you have an opportunity and it works for your family, try to do it. And if you can, go to a place that doesn't speak a Latin-based language. Because moving to Germany or in London, which is great, is not as much like moving overseas as it is moving to Asia. So do it. You'll learn a lot about yourself. You'll become more diverse and open-eyed about things. Coming home, I always said this. When you come back to Dulles International Airport and you get off and you get in line for immigration, there are two lines. There's one for Americans, and then there's one for immigrants. And if you didn't have signs over either of those lines, you would not know which is which. And it is a testament to the diversity and the strength of this country, even in these troubling times where we're seeing racial divisions and these problems around the country, that we are a multicultural, diverse society, and that from that grows our strength. And I'll tell you, when I got off the plane at Dulles, that was always a welcome sight.
The book is just a great story, a well-written story. And if you don't know about Korea, it's really worth knowing. It's a great story by Frank Ahrens, Soul Man. Soul Man by Frank Ahrens. Frank, thank you so much.
Sinclair, thank you very much, and thank your listeners, too.